Mini episode 1667 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1667. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you here today for our 2023 World Series preview with two of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries. This is the combo that we put together last year. We had Joe Stazek, our good friend, Philly media legend, and currently part of the Callous Remarks podcast with our great friend and fellow FDH Lounge dignitary, Steve Callous. We had Joe in last year as the Phillies were in the World Series. We booked Joe over the weekend under the same assumption, and I offered him an out, but he was man enough to come on anyways, and I truly, truly appreciate it. And I'd like to think that if him and Callous if the shoe was on the other foot and they wanted me to come on with the assumption that a Cleveland team was going to make it to a championship and then they ended up crapping out, I'd like to think that I would show the character that Joe Stazek is showing today. I can't tell you for sure if I would, but I'd like to think so. So,
you're too kind. It's all good, man. I told you before, it's a little therapeutic anyway.
Sure, it works for me. And your insights based on what you saw watching the series very closely, the National League Championship Series, will definitely come in handy as we preview the World Series. And a mainstay of our baseball coverage over the years with the FDH Lounge. And I like to say there are some folks that are dignitaries before there were dignitaries. At the old Sports Talk Network, before there was an FDH Lounge, one of the shows that was kind of a predecessor for it, as far as the tone and the style and the feel of it, was Life's a Pitch with Ken Detweiler, where I was a sidekick on the show with Ken. And we used to talk baseball all the time there. And he has been an FDH Lounge dignitary all the way along here with this show and coming on primarily, not always, but primarily to talk baseball with us. So again, we put together the combo we had last year for the World Series with Joe and Ken. Ken Detweiler, always a pleasure, my friend. So great to have you back on.
I'm not worthy of you and Joe, I'm telling you. It's just, I'm not worthy. This is, but thanks. I recall, you know, I'm going to let my wife listen to all this stuff, well, even though she could care less about baseball.
There you go. And in terms of not worthy, let's start it on this note here, because in terms of the three of us who are certainly worthy of always having good things happen to our baseball teams with our rabid fandom, and a lot of the hard luck that's been dealt to our teams over a period of time. And sometimes that hard luck originates from the organization, as it frequently has in my decades as a Tribe fan. But it's one of these things where I can really identify with where Joe's coming from right now, as can Ken, because there is a situation here. One of our FDH Lounge dignitaries and a great friend of the show are both, I won't even say, lukewarm baseball fans. I mean, they probably didn't hardly watch anything during the regular season here, but now in the World Series, hey, my Rangers are in, my Diamondbacks are in. So as far as it goes with the Diamondbacks, I speak of good friend, fellow FDH Lounge dignitary, and somebody that we had taped a football segment with him and Joe previously, Derek Joseph. He is, of course, a Diamondbacks fan, or if they make it to the playoffs, at least he's forthright about it, right? At least he's forthright. Doesn't claim to be, you know, a regular season fan, a non-bandwagon jumper. He admits what he is, and I guess there's a certain amount of credit for that. Well, his fiance, Maya Master, our great friend, as I've always called her on the show, the trillion-dollar baby, somebody that I truly feel is going to take over the world with all of her wellness acumen and her great wisdom and insights at such a young age. Young age is part of it too. These guys both being Zoomers. So she's now like, oh, my Rangers are in the World Series. And their wedding is coming up, and it will coincide with Game 7 if it goes to a Game 7. And she was bemoaning this today on Twitter. And I was saying to a friend of mine that, like, because I'm sitting here like, I'll probably never see one in my lifetime. And I desperately want a World Series. I'll probably never see one. My mother sobbed her eyes out in 97 when we lost. I mean, I was disappointed. She sobbed her eyes out in front of my bewildered father and didn't live to see.
Jose Mesa.
Yes, exactly. And didn't live to see them getting back to the World Series or anything else like that. My mother will never be here for that. And here's my two dilettante baseball fan friends. And I was telling this to a friend of mine today. I was just like, yeah, Maya's already apparently sweating the whole Game 7 thing and the effects on the wedding. I said, I don't think of myself as a rise above it kind of a guy, but I guess with good enough friends, I guess I can be, because I'm not rooting for that scenario. And my friend was like, hell, I'll root for it. I'm like, no, no, no. Let's be better than that, okay? Let's be better than that. One of these two undeserving baseball quote-unquote fans is going to get a World Series here. And am I triggered by that? I wouldn't be telling the story if I wasn't triggered by that. But look, I'm not rooting for that. I don't want anything to intrude on their wedding. We all want a nice, long, exciting series. But I want it to go six games. And spoiler alert, I think I'm going to get what I'm looking for on that. But that's where I told you guys both off air that I had a story to tell on this one here. And again, I think it lived up to the billing, Joe.
Yes.
Absolutely did. Totally did. I can't even, I'm speechless.
Oh, man. And Ken, you got to love it here. A couple of Zoomers that, you know, I love them to death, but as I said to you off air, they probably don't know if the baseball is stuffed or pumped up or whatever. So, you know,
I mean, amazing.
It's just one of those things. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Would you call them a fair weather fan, or are they worse?
I'd say worse. I mean, fair weather. I mean, I don't think either one probably watched hardly anything in the regular season. And it's one of these things, too. I find myself, and again, I love Maya to death, but I find myself giving her a lot of crap these days of, like, she had a picture on Instagram the other day because she's one of the world's biggest Swifties. She was wearing a red T-shirt that said something like, I'm rooting for Taylor's boyfriend. And I'm like, oh my God. That is, you talk about a plague upon the sports world, right? Like, you know, good friend of mine or no good friend of mine, nothing brings out my inner get off my porch instincts than seeing something like that. So now that we've all established ourselves as thoroughly grouchy non-Zoomers here, let's take a look at this. And again, Joe, let's start with you. Let's start with the National League Championship Series. It was a shocker. Both of these series, again, home team dropping both games 6 and 7 in the series. That had not happened previously in a championship series. We all thought, all of us, and I think justifiably so, that this thing was done going back to Philly. And it's one of these things where you do have in the back of your head looking at Arizona in the playoffs here, that they're the team where you just can't shove the wooden stake through their heart. And that was the reason I actually picked them to beat L.A., once they got out of the first round. I was like, L.A. is going to be ripe for these guys. They're just going to be a big, fat, sitting target. But Philly had a lot of the same kind of vibe to me, though. Philly seemed like a hard-to-kill kind of a team also, coming off of what happened with taking out Atlanta for the second straight year. But you were texting me today very frustrated and furious, and you had some very, very good points to make, some salient points, Joe, on what you thought went wrong for the Phillies here in the series, and particularly Game 6 and 7.
Well, you know, and I told you, I mean, the hurt will come, the lament will come. I'll get to that in a little bit. But I'm more, like, just annoyed with this happened last year, if you recall. And there was some speculation after Game 3 of the World Series. The Phillies hit 5 home runs, took a 2-1 lead. You know, all the accolades and, you know, it was all kinds of fun. The town was going crazy. And from that point on, not only did they get no hit in the next game, which is the second time in baseball history, see Don Larson, they hit 0.095 the rest of the way. They didn't hit 100 the rest of the way in the last 3 games. Now, again, Houston's pitching was very good, but come on. Their approach, And again, the speculation was, well, did they kind of get, I used the term, did they get drunk off those home runs and swing for the fences? Well, nothing was more evident than what happened this year after the 10-0 game in game two. And of course, the 6 home runs against the Braves in game three. And, you know, the place is rocking and they hit first pitch of the series. You know, Schwarber takes Zach, I forget his name, he's a local kid, deep, and then Harper on the fifth pitch, you know, and they were bombing away again. Then 10-0 in the second game. And from that point on, they hit 197 the rest of the way. And not only that, their approach is like it was last year. And I'm going to – listen, I know stars have to come through. They do. But – and you have to kind of, you know, police yourself in terms of being disciplined. But I told Rob Thompson responsible for that in terms of his approach. You got to talk to the guy. Hey, guys, listen. You know, stop swinging for the fences every time. Castellano looked like after – like he hit – back-to-back home runs in 2 games in a row, the 4 home runs, it's never been done before. He looked like he was trying to hit 500-foot home runs every time up. And he was awful. The last 2 nights at Citizens Bank Park, you know, a place where opposing teams go to die, their dreams go to die, Harper, Schwarber, Turner, Castellano, 1-for-28. Okay, and their at-bats were horrendous. They weren't moving runners. They weren't, you know, doing anything small ball-ish. You know, they had men on third with less than 2 outs, no fly balls, back-to-back strikeouts. Thompson's getting killed for not pinch-hitting Rojas in the fourth when they had the lead and the bases loaded. And I told you, Rojas is the skinniest guy in Major League Baseball. He can't hit half his weight, not half his weight. He was hitting like 0.87 last night, and he missed the third pitch, which he struck out on by about 1.5 feet. You know, and then Thompson gives the, well, we would have had to change pitchers, and then we would have had to put Cabe in, and we liked, you know, it's early to take our best defensive player out. What? They need runs. The bases were loaded. Suarez only lasted another third of an inning, and he got yanked anyway. So I put a lot of it on Thompson for not – you know, the approach is terrible. Listen, you got to talk to the fellow guys. Listen, we got to be more disciplined. A couple of the strikeouts last night, I think in the 8th inning, when this, what's his name came in, the tall reliever, the bridge to Seawalt came in. I think he threw 3 strikes in that inning and struck out 3 guys. And 2 of them struck out. The ball hit the plate. The ball bounced on the plate. It was so bad. Like, I'm almost like thinking like, I don't need to see any more of this. So not that I wanted it to be over, and it was a tremendous opportunity, but I also thought they were smelling themselves when they went to Arizona. They kind of mailed in game 3, wasted a great opportunity and a great pitching performance by Suarez. Only run they scored was on a wild pitch. Next night, they blow a 3-run lead in the 7th. Sir Anthony Domingo comes in, and he walks a guy in, and then Kimbrel, who should not have seen the postseason, especially in back-to-back games, gives up 3 runs in the 8th, including a game-tying 2-run home run by Walker. And, you know, that was it. And I know they came back and started playing, you know, long ball again in game 3, and that's why everyone thought, okay, they took control of the series. Here we go. But listen, you know, you let teams hang around. And I thought the Diamondbacks deserved a lot of credit. They took singles. They hit singles. They stole 4 bases. I think they stole 8 in the last 2 games, which is what they were kind of known for. They, what's his name? Carroll had a great night. He didn't have a great series, but he had a great night, including the only time he didn't get a hit, he was 3-for-4. He drove in a run with a long fly ball. Phillies could have used some of that. Turner's at bat with Schwarber on second with no outs. Instead of moving him and Bryce Harper's fly ball would have scored him, you know, he pulls the ball. And it was outside. All he had to do was turn his body a little bit, make sure it goes to the right. Swinging for the fences. That's all these guys did. I thought it was a disgraceful performance, and I think it starts from the top.
That's very interesting. And I have to say, too, that when you're talking about possibly like getting drunk off of their home runs, I'm reminded of here. Again, I follow a number of very eclectic people on Twitter, one of whom, the journalist Heidi Moore, I'm starting to kind of wonder at this point in time why I follow her, because some of her anti-Hamas stuff is really grating on me at this point. So I don't know how long I'll be following, but when she talks about the Phillies, she always refers approvingly to the himbo culture that is like exemplified by Nick Castellanos. And I think of that team full of himbos when you're talking about the whole approach with the home runs and everything like that. Like,
oh, it's awful.
You know, I don't really appreciate this gal's approach to the Middle East, but I think she put her finger on it with the Phillies there, Joe.
She got that one right. She nailed that one. Yeah. My goodness. Yeah, the last 17 batters last night. Last 17 batters in a game 7, not a hit for the Phillies. Not one hit.
That's remarkable. I mean, you know, you almost have to try to have it be at that point
right
here. Yeah, I mean, just utterly, utterly remarkable. And, Ken, that's a thing where I'm looking at this series. Ken, I know that you and I were hoping, you know, for Joe's sake and everything else like that. I've got some other friends that are Philly fans that they would be able to get it done. But, again, just a real, real surprise here because it looked like the ship had been righted by Game 5. It looked like Philly kind of grabbed the control of it back. That critical Game 5 there in any sport, ultimately, you know, basketball, hockey, baseball, 2-2 series, Game 5, it's almost always pivotal, particularly when you got the last two games at home. So, Ken, I know you had to be as shocked as me and Joe looking at this thing the way it played out.
I was, because I picked, when you and I were on before, Rick, I picked the Phillies because I had told you at the time, I said, they're just going to run the table because they won it more than anybody. They've got the bad taste from last year in their mouth. You know how these professional people, they're the most competitive people in the whole world. I don't care what sport it is. So they weren't going to be denied. And I thought Harper was a hell of a leader. But to go along with what Joe was saying, Castellanos, 1-for-24 in all 7 games of his series. Harper, 2-for-16 of games 3-7. Turner, 3-7, batted with a .105. You're not gonna win a donut with those kind of things. And the thing that stuck. And here, this is just the old coach that I in me, but I like to watch how these guys maneuver the game. It's like a chessboard, and you're always thinking ahead and this and that. Why in God's name didn't they just walk Marte?
Yeah, exactly. That's a good question. Again,
he made no adjustment to the game.
Right. He was killing. So what does he have, like 16 straight games and he's for to begin a postseason? He leads like everybody. He's leading, you know, I think he just set the record last night or it was close, but that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I just don't get it. And then again, Marte was the biggest thing that stuck out to me. And I wonder how this series would have even gone this far had not the Diamondbacks, Lovello, not released the hounds.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody just said, hey, let's just start stealing bases. They couldn't throw anybody out.
None. And they didn't do that in the first two games. It was like they were very hesitant. Very hesitant.
No, they didn't do it. They didn't do anything. All of a sudden, they came out from behind the curtain, and they're running like a bunch of knuckleheads or appleheads. They're just going nuts around the bases.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't even care. They would take second, and they'd take third on some occasions. The third thing that I wrote down was, you look at the end of the game to win the game, and I found out, and this isn't anything that I unveiled, but I was listening and reading some stuff. The Diamondbacks beat the Brewers, the Dodgers, and the Phils, and they always use their closers at the end, their setup guy and their closer. Those weren't always available for those other teams, and I found that very interesting. Throughout their individual series between the Brewers, the Dodgers, and the Phils. And I thought, that's pretty smart.
Yeah.
So I hats off to Lovello
for
doing that when the other managers didn't do that.
Different approaches to working bullpens, no question about it. And it really was enlightening. And then on the other side, again, you had the same kind of thing, this All-Texas American League Championship Series. Once again, Game 5. You thought that Texas had blown their last best chance when Jose, when you end up seeing Altuve get it done there with the home run toward the end after Garcia looked like he put it away for Texas. And then it started looking like, well, fait accompli, they're going to finish at home. But again, Texas, just like Arizona and just like Philly had been before, very tough to shove the wooden stake through their heart. I think a lot of that goes to Bruce Bochy being there, which there are a lot of very interesting angles to this World Series now. Bruce Bochy having beaten Texas in the World Series in 2010, having beaten Max Scherzer in the World Series in 2012. A lot of different angles here as this thing goes full circle with him coming to Texas and, again, being this big kind of difference maker in year one for them here. But a classic, classic series between them. But this is the thing, the contrast, Joe, and the reason that I picked Texas on Twitter before the series started. Well, again, you know, it looked like they just had that whole kind of aura of being just tough to kill at this point. And for Houston, they showed against Minnesota. Okay, they're capable of, like, pushing a switch and getting it done. But a team that didn't even have a winning home record this year. Like, I don't know if Houston was just marking time until October, but they were just counting on, basically, I think, having that aura, being there, being the team to get it done. And Texas, again, much like Arizona, I think that's the thing they have in common, was that they just kept coming at you and coming at you, and they're capable of being red-hot offensively the way that Philly is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, you have to also look at their starting pitching, who's been very good. Eovaldi, Montgomery, 4-0, and Montgomery's ERA is 2.38, 2.42 for Eovaldi. And Scherzer hasn't even been, his ERA is like 9.25. You told me that like a year or two ago. I'd be like, Scherzer's your third guy? I mean, I'd be like, wow. But they showed a lot of moxie. They would go into Houston. I know Houston, I think, was like 40-47 or something at home this year, something horrific. But after Altuve hits that home run in game five, it was kind of like, well, we just got swept at home. I mean, now we got to go back to Houston. You think that they, you know, at least one of the games that come up here, they got a 20 spot hung on them in two games. And Christian Javier, mm-hmm. I mean, I was rooting for Texas, not just because, you know, Houston, the champs and whatever. I didn't want to see Javier again. Last year, Phillies couldn't touch him last year. He's 4-0 with a 0.82 ERA coming in, and for his last four postseason starts, he doesn't last two-thirds of an inning. Like, they just went wild. And I got to give him credit. Listen, they didn't flinch. Diamondbacks didn't flinch. They didn't blink. They were down 2-0, and again, a lot of pundits, I wasn't one of them, but deep down, I'm like, well, they would have to win 4 or 5. That's really tough to do against. And they did, you know, and they did it steadily. You know, they didn't bomb away. They just kind of played their game. They went back to, like Ken said, they went back to speed ball and small ball, and they played great defense. But, I mean, I kind of like Texas in the series because I think that they do have a little more pop. I think they hit 265 as a team, where the Diamondbacks are in the 240s. Not a big difference, but I like their starting pitching. And Garcia's on a roll, and I just think that – and I like Bruce Bochy. You know, for whatever – wherever he goes, they win. I mean, he won 3 with the Giants. He's on a couch last year. They call him, sure, I'll go back and Matt. Actually, they lost 104 games 2 years ago. Yeah. The Diamondbacks lost 110 2 years ago. Like, how does that happen? That's why baseball's so – so it's such a funny game, and you can't take things lightly, and you never know. It's not, you know, it's just a different animal in terms of, you know, upsets and what team. Like, look at the Braves. Braves can't get out of their own way after an historic offensive year, and you know they you know, again, second round out, or first round, if you want to call it that. So it's crazy. Listen, I know me and Steve always talk about Clayton Kershaw as a Peyton Manning of baseball because he's no good in the postseason. He lasted a third of an inning. He lasted a third of an inning against the Diamondbacks. Yeah. What is that? He's untouchable. He's untouchable in the regular season. Yeah. So I give him a lot of credit, but I still, listen, I wouldn't be surprised either way. But I think Texas has some more pop. They're on kind of a roll, which the Diamondbacks are, but I just think they have the moxie, and they have a proven manager who just seems to push the right buttons. You know, they have Seager, who's been killing it, and, you know, they brought in Simeon. They just have done the right things, and I don't know how they turned that around from a 104-loss season 2 years later. They're in the World Series, but I like their chances. And DeGrom's not even pitched. Imagine if they had DeGrom if he was healthy.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Unbelievable. Well, yeah, so I like Texas a little bit, a little bit.
I do, yep. too, just to give a spoiler alert on this. And after we get Ken's thoughts on the ALCS, I am going to go inside the numbers here for the World Series. And I will say, on some of the numbers we're going to get into, it really is the personification right now with Arizona of lies, damned lies, and statistics. Because you look at their numbers coming into October, you would have never seen this coming. But they have outperformed certainly their regular season numbers in a lot of different ways. Ken, turning back to the ALCS for a second here, your thoughts on it, that, again, it was a real classic. Two Hall of Fame managers going at it here, you know, pushing buttons both ways. Bochy seemed to get the better of the exchanges here, which is one of the reasons I think that Texas advances. But, again, just that Game 5, what it will probably remind me of for all time is probably, now this is something where, again, I don't have first-hand, you know, memory of having seen the game or whatever, but everything I know about it, Game 6 of the 75 World Series here. Boston wins that big home run, the Carlton Fisk home run, and it's that's the thing that you remember. Oh, that great moment for Boston! And then, oh yeah, they didn't get it done in the end. That's kind of the mirror image, I think, right here for Houston. Because they had that big win. It should have been the gut punch that buried Texas, their third straight loss in a row at home. And then Houston blows the American League Championship Series in Games 6 and 7.
Yeah, a couple things that come to mind and that I in my notes here. I wonder what the, speaking of numbers, like Joe said, I wonder what the odds were in Vegas. A number 5 seed playing a number 6 seed for the World Series.
Probably pretty long, probably.
Yeah, and then this is for Steve, of course. I'm guessing he's saying throughout this whole series, good riddance to the Astros. So that's for you, Steve. But what I see this coming back, well, the Rangers lost 3 games in a row, 3 straight. And I was pulling for the Rangers in this case because I used to do a lot of business in Texas. And I would get checkups and stuff like that, freeloader that I am. And but I'm telling you, I think the Rangers have and this is just a lefty in me, Chapman, they need to throw him as often as they can against whoever they're playing. That guy is just wildly effective. I mean, when he hit McCormick at 103.8 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Who's going to stand in there? I don't care how much these guys are paying or how good they are. Not me.
Me either.
No. Jesus, that would scare the chickens out of anybody. I mean, that had to hurt. And I was just like, I jumped out of my chair and I was like, oh, Lord. So, and he's throwing that stuff all the time. He doesn't know where the ball goes. That's a weapon, in my opinion. Now, the question for the Diamondbacks, or for the Rangers, rather, against the Diamondbacks, I'm going to go back to the stolen bases. Do the Rangers have a catcher that can throw these runners out? Because now that they've discovered they can run like a bunch of wild animals around the bases, otherwise, if they can't do, because the Phillies couldn't do it, this series could be over quick.
Did you notice JT Realmuto didn't even get up a couple times throwing from his knees?
Yeah, and they still couldn't get him.
Yeah.
Still couldn't get him.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think that's going to be a key. Just, you're going to have to stop the run at some point because they discovered they can actually run and decide to use it. And it's like, why would you stop now? But the bottom line for me is, the thing that I'm really going to be curious to watch is, from what I've been told and what I've read, is we're talking to some extent analytics versus old school.
Mm-hmm.
Lovato being the analytics, and of course, Bochy being old school, even though he's done some great things to, you know, change the game. But I just like, wow, I have to. Yeah, I won't give it away, but it's just who I'm going to pick. But I think it's going to be a heck of a series. I want to say this whole off season, the playoffs, with all these young kids thrown in. I know I'm going off topic here, Rick. Yeah. And Joe.
Go ahead.
But I have not seen this many first-year players come out and really make an impact like this throughout the whole playoffs, but especially here in the finals.
Well, here's the thing, though, Ken, and this is the thing where the rules changes this year. I think to a lesser extent than ever, that phrase, youth is wasted on the young, that has never been less applicable than right now. Because if you're young and you got those legs and you're somebody like Corbin Carroll, oh my goodness, the things you can do, right? So, I mean, that's a thing where in looking at this, and by the way, Corbin Carroll, this was a stat, I saw this on Twitter, I retweeted this after last night. This is courtesy of OptiStats, at OptiStats. There have now been 284 instances in MLB postseason history where a team scored at least four runs in a series-clinching victory, including wildcard games. Corbin Carroll is the only player to score, to either score or drive in every one of his team's runs in such a win. 284 instances. Wow. He's a rookie. And I'm looking at this, and again, you, as you said, Joe, correctly, not much of an NLCS to write home about until Game 7, but the previous two rounds, oh my goodness. I mean, he was like a video game guy watching him there, just with all the different impacts he was making in the first two rounds. And I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking back to 2012 at the end of the season when it was like, you know, I know Mike Trout's a rookie, but who's to say he's not the best player in baseball? And I'll put it to you first, Joe. I mean, I don't – how crazy am I for saying that he has to at least be in the conversation? I know the kind of year that Ronald Acuna had, but, I mean, Corbin Carroll, I think, already has to be in that breath as far as being a five-tool guy. And now that, again, now that the running game has been liberalized in baseball, he wouldn't have had 57 steals or whatever it is under the old system, but now they're letting you run. You know, the bases are bigger, it's harder to do the pickoffs, et cetera, et cetera. For the way the game is right now, I mean, if there's anybody else that you would take to start a team next year, you could probably count the guys on one hand at most. Probably have a few fingers left over, I'd think.
No, I agree. I mean, you know, he's hitting about 300, but I mean, come on. What is he doing? 21 years old, and he did everything right. Led the game off with a single, and again, just took singles and played very good defense. And, you know, I mean, he had a great year. You know, he had a great year. 76 ribs, 25 home runs, about a little under 300. But, I mean, he owned Game 7 last night. He owned Game 7. And he was hesitant. He got on base early in Game 1. And the announcers were like, why is he not? He seemed like Tim. He wasn't. He didn't try to steal. They didn't try anything in the first two games. And then, you know, they unleashed the hounds. But I thought last night he owned Game 7. And not a lot of flash. Not a lot of flash. Just base hits, singles. And I thought that it was huge to drive in that run, hitting a long fly ball and getting a tag up there, which is something the Phillies couldn't do, and they had opportunities to do it. So, he played smart ball, and he's so young. Maybe he doesn't know any better, but I just thought he was awesome. But, yes, I agree. I mean, he'd be in my starting lineup if I had to start a team.
Oh, absolutely. And Ken, I know he's been gobbled up, Ken, I know, for years in our long-term keeper league. He probably got snagged about 3 years ago in our long-term keeper. So, you know, guys like me, you have seen him coming for a while. But, I mean, your thoughts on this, on whether he can be in that breath for the best player in the game right now already.
So what you're saying, Rick, is he's gone, so I can't draft him.
well, Ken, you and I might be
arm.
Ken, you and I might be arm wrestling for him in our non-keeper league next year, and I think we will be. But in our keeper league, we've both been shut out for a couple of years now on him, sadly enough. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, next thing you're gonna say is Carter from Texas is gone too.
yeah, sad but true.
I mean, you know, I'm going to hang up on both of you right now. This is discouraging. Jeez, I can cry now.
Yeah. I mean, what a player.
Oh, he is. And you know what? These kids, and I'm not, you know, trashing Harper because I love watching Harper play, but when he came up, he would fight with everybody. He had a real attitude. Mm-hmm. It wasn't politically correct then. And,
He was a total punk in the minor, blowing kisses to the pitchers, and just he was like one of the most hated guys in the league. He really grew up.
He did, and these guys have that. They play the game the way it's supposed to be played. Not that he didn't, but Papelbon and him, that's still a classic.
Right.
That's right.
That was like, whoa. Come into my locker room and start acting like this? Get out of here. Let's go.
Well, that's one of the things that makes Carroll special. There is no barrier to entry as far as appreciating him. There's no issues of personality or mouth or anything like that, like there is a lot of times with guys. But as promised here, for taking a look at the World Series, a look here, and this is available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com, the 2023 FDH end of regular season breakdown. We referenced this heading into the playoffs, so these are the regular season numbers here, and I'm going to give you all the numbers that go into the statistical index. Suffice it to say, the bottom line is Texas placed 5th in the statistical index, Arizona placed 14th, and you're about to see why in both instances that was the case. Here's all the different ingredients. The final FDH power rankings for the season, Texas 5, Arizona 14, so it actually squared out the same as the overall metric. OBP, Texas 3, Arizona 14. OPS Plus, Texas 4, Arizona 15. FIP, this is where it gets a little more competitive. Texas is 17, Arizona 19. ERA Plus, similarly. Texas 17, Arizona 21, Pythagorean wins, Texas 4, and Arizona was 14th. In terms of the SRS, Texas 4th, Arizona 14th, and run differential, Texas 4th, Arizona 14th. So when you factor in, you got a 19th place and a 21st place in there. If you average it all out, although Arizona's number was the 14th lowest number in this. And it basically, the lower your number, because you're adding up rankings, the lower the number, the better. But they actually averaged over 15, which means obviously worse than average if you add up all of their categories. So it's one of those things where, again, lies, damned lies in statistics. You got to be hot. You got to catch a wave. In a way, they kind of remind me of a team that previously disappointed Arizona, because I think Arizona got knocked out of the playoffs, if I remember, in 07 by Colorado. Colorado was a team that got red hot and, again, ran into a brick wall in the World Series in the form of the Red Sox at the time. And I don't know if the same is going to happen here, because Arizona's not riding an undefeated streak the way Colorado was. Colorado was just this otherworldly kind of lightning bolt kind of a deal. Arizona's just a team that keeps coming at you. But in looking at this here, Joe, for the overall pick for the series, I'm going to say Texas in 6. I think that, again, you have two teams that are very hard to kill, but one team has, I think, a little bit deeper lineup, a little bit deeper pitching, and has Bruce Bochy. And Bruce Bochy has won 3 World Series. The only World Series he ever lost was going against the 98 Yankees. I think we can give him a pass for that one. So that's my sense of looking at it. I'll start with you, Joe. I'm going to say Texas in 6 looking at it here. How do you see it breaking down?
I'm going to go 7. I'm going to go 7. I think the Diamondbacks are that scrappy. And again, who knows who goes cold or not. I do like the starting pitching a little better. I thought Merrill's been great. Merrill gave up for the Diamondbacks basically 3 hits in each game, but the first 3 hits were home runs. Zach Gallen, his ERA is up over 5, and I like Eovaldi and Montgomery. I mean, they've been pitching well, and I like their pop. But the Diamondbacks seem to, like you said, they have that, you can't really drive that stake through their heart. So I think they'll make it a long series. They'll find ways to win games and force this game 7. But I do think, in the end, I think Texas will be home. I like Bochy. For whatever reason, he wins usually wherever he goes. Give him a pass in the Yankee series. But I just give him the edge. Now, again, anything can happen. It's baseball. We just saw a lot of crazy stuff happen. But, you know, that's who I'd lean towards. I lean towards Texas to win the whole thing.
Well,
in seven.
In terms of it going seven games, I'm picturing here somewhat kind of with a grimace here. I won't be able to make it down to Austin. I had to send my regrets for the wedding that weekend here, but I'll be picturing my friends with a sad grimace if it goes seven. Because let's face it, there are going to be so many people buried in their phones watching the game during reception. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. That for their sake, that would not be good. And I don't know how much consolation Maya would take in her quote-unquote her Rangers. And I have to put air quotes on her Rangers. winning the World Series. But Ken, how do you see it breaking down? You seem to be leaning the same kind of way as me and Joe, if I'm kind of picking up your drift.
I am, but I'm going to put a little asterisk by mine because, again, and I don't see Bochy pitching to Marte like he was in this last series.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for God's sakes, that is just unbelievable to me. And I hope that Texas can throw out these runners. Otherwise, the D-backs are going to go seven. I know I'm hedging my bet. I know that, you know, on this. I'm going to go with Texas in seven, too. But just to say, and here again, I'm going to go analytics versus old school. My example is, gentlemen, is, and I can't tell you which game it was. I should have wrote this down, but when I was watching the game, I didn't. Bochy batted Grossman, number three in an order in one of the games. And I thought, what in God's name is he doing? I mean, number three? Yeah. I don't see Robbie Grossman as a number three hitter in that situation.
No.
But Bochy has, they have the staff. I know all that. But I just was like, that was a head scratcher and still is. But yeah, I'll have to go up to go seven if they can not go to Marte and they stop the base runners. Yeah, and they've got Bochy on their team.
Well, so, I mean. Look, I mean, you talk about not being able to see him as a number three hitter. Robbie Grossman, 10 home runs, batted .238. I agree with you completely. He's not a number three hitter in the Mexican League, Ken, much less the World
Series.
No,
I agree. You
know.
Sí, señor. No. I am still aghast with that. I'm sitting here thinking, that's got to be a typo, no? And there he comes, trotting up there, you know, the number three hole. And I was like, whoa. But that's why he's Bruce Bochy, and I'm here talking to you guys.
You got a lot better. There's a lot better options to go with on this team, certainly, because, again, between Marcus Semien, Josh Jung, Adolis Garcia, and I will say Corey Seager, a guy who has a chance. When you look back at the 2020 World Series, this is a guy who has a chance to really etch his name as one of the premier October players of his generation. By the way, Corey Seager, having played in the last World Series in this ballpark in Arlington, as they were the neutral site of the 2020 World Series. So second World Series in 4 years, we'll have at least some of the games played here.
Stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So, it'll be, and again, that series certainly went well for Corey Seager and the Dodgers, and we'll have to see if he has the same kind of luck here this time around. But again, Arizona, the magic that they've been able to make between not just the way that Carroll's been playing, but Gurriel has really had his moment postseason, Christian Walker with his power, Marte, the National League Championship Series MVP. And again, neither team really noted for pitching, but both of them at this point have clearly had enough. And this is one of these things, I think, again, where this is the evolution at this point, I think, with baseball. And there's a lot of people that don't like this, but it is at this point more so akin to March Madness, or I will say the Stanley Cup. I remember doing the Stanley Cup preview, finals preview last June with Russ Cohen, and we both agreed. Those were not necessarily the two best teams there. And I think we were thinking more of Florida than Vegas. You would have had a hard time saying these are definitively the two best teams in the NHL. And I think, you know, Florida kind of proved that through the course of the series. And I think looking at it here, I think it's the same thing. For everybody, because everybody's all been like, oh, Texas and Arizona, who would have predicted that? Like, well, should we have? I mean, I will tell you, people looked at me like I had a third eyeball at the beginning of the season when I did pick Arizona to get the last wild card spot. I could see this coming.
Wow, nice.
Well, thank you. To a tiny degree, Joe Stazak, to a tiny degree, I could see this coming. But, I mean, not nearly how it played out. I'm not gonna be real convenient about it and say I told you so all along because I didn't. But, you know. It's going to be fun. It's going to be entertaining. And I'll start with you here, Joe. Any other thoughts on this that you have that we didn't get to so far?
No, I just, you know, I'd love to see a good series. It's tough getting this far and not, you know, winning. When Diamondbacks, this could be one. Is this a one-hit wonder type thing? I mean, they won 84 games. They were minus 15 in run differential. But, you know, again, and you mentioned the best team might not have been in the Stanley Cup Finals, best team, but it really comes down to who plays the best. I mean, you can be the best team on paper, but the only thing that matters is how you play in those 60 minutes or those nine innings, and Diamondbacks have gotten it done. The regret I have about the Phillies, I mean, how many, you know, they're not winning the division next year. How many times are we going to try to knock out Atlanta? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to do. This was hard to do. They were on the cusp. So, you know, I'd like to see a good series. I mean, Texas... they were one strike away in 2011, and then David Freese took over with the double down the line, and he hits a home run in Game 6, and then they win in Game 7. Ron Washington was the manager at the time. I remember feeling for him, one strike away, David Freese. I always remember David Freese, which is unbelievable. But, so, you know, I don't want to see a good series. I don't know if these teams will be back, but certainly impressive after, you know, 2 years ago losing over 100 games. And I just think, like you said, it's kind of like analytics versus old school. It's going to be interesting. I just want to see a good series. And I will watch. I know a lot of my Philly people, I'm not going to watch. I always watch. You know what I mean? What are you going to do? You know what I mean? I just enjoy watching, you know, competition and seeing how the team that beat you does. And I do like Texas a little bit, but if the Diamondbacks won, tip my cap. I know Dusty Baker said he hates tipping his cap, but, you know, had to tip his cap to the Rangers, they kicked their ass. So
yeah.
What are you going to do? So, you know, again, it doesn't, you don't have to be the best team on paper. It's who plays the best, and that's who's going to win it.
And by the way, news that's breaking while we're taping this here, Dusty Baker announcing his retirement. I guess that will be coming out on Thursday. So,
yep.
Goodbye to somebody who I think etched himself as a Hall of Fame manager.
Totally.
Clinched that status in his time in Houston, I believe. And, it's one of these things where, for Arizona, the temptation is to say, well, they're a young team and everything like that. And you look at, you know, Carroll and Marino and Alec Thomas and a couple of guys. But then you've got, you know, Gurriel is 29. Marte is 29, Christian Walker's 32. So some of the most key parts are young, but not all of them. So as far as them being back, having said that, again, Corbin Carroll, 22 years of age. So feel free to say that they will be back, I think, with that guy being only 22. But I'll swing it around to you, Ken. Any thoughts you have on this that we didn't get to yet?
Well, it's just an overall thought, gentlemen. For me, this year... Well, a couple things. The first thing is, am I the only one that's sick and tired of hearing about, well, these guys that had a bye, L.A.?
Oh, God. I'm with you on that, bro.
I think it's a factor, though. I think it's a factor.
But when does it not become a factor? And I'm not picking on you, Joe, here. But Philly played 7 games just like the Diamondbacks did. And I'm sorry, and the same with the Texas series. Come on, if you're the better team and you're seated higher, which means
7 games, you should get in gear by, you know, somewhere
in gear. And Philly had the 2-0 lead on them, banging the ball all over the place like Murderer's Row. I maybe there is something to it, but I'm just tired of hearing about excuses for the big market teams and the teams that everybody wants to win. But overall, gentlemen, this is the most enjoyable postseason that I've seen in quite some time.
I'm with you.
From game one up until however this finished.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that. You know, despite where, you know, getting bounced on my head. Yeah, I agree. It's been very enjoyable outside of the disaster. And it is an epic collapse. They're already ranking it in the top five of epic Philly collapses. And, you know, there are plenty of them. So they're talking about it with like the 64 Phillies. If you got, I don't know, if that's a thing around here. They had like a 4.5 game lead with 6 games left. Everyone still talks about that. A little before my time, but this was epic. Well,
I still remember. I'm the old guy.
Yeah. Gene Mock.
They folded like a cheap suit.
Totally.
Yep.
So,
just another chapter in the lore.
Yeah.
That's right.
I'll send you a Guardians cap. You won't feel so bad.
You know what's funny? I actually bought a Cleveland cap a few months ago because I like the red visor with it. It's a neutral. So I have one. But, absolutely. I'll wear it proud.
There you go. Well, again, you know, we'll all be watching the World Series. I agree with you, Joe. I don't respect the perspective at all. My team's not in it, so I won't watch. I've never been that guy. I never will be that guy. If I ever was going to be that guy, I would have probably stopped watching the year that it was Golden State and Boston in the NBA Finals. But I subjected myself to that. Actually had to root for Boston, which was nauseating enough. I mean, that was shades of 01 when I had to root for New Jersey over Colorado in the Cup final. I mean, as a Red Wings fan, what was I to do with that one, huh? So, you know, I've watched through circumstances that have been completely nauseating. And again, I have no reason to not want to watch this one here, other than, like I said, if you're being a purist, if it's like, are these the two best teams? Well, we'll see. I mean, I think Arizona is the team that has more to prove on this, having won 84 games of the regular season. But if they beat Texas at the end of it, you have a hard time saying they don't deserve to be world champs. We'll see. They're the biggest come from nowhere team, I think, since Colorado in 07. So we'll see if they can pull it off, and it will be fascinating to see. But I look forward to talking about this after the World Series with you guys and seeing where this goes. So hopefully we'll have a fun World Series to look back on here. Really appreciate you guys being here. Joe Stazak from the Callous Remarks podcast and fellow FDH Lounge dignitary Ken Detweiler. Thank you guys very much. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1667.